Hey, soccer fans, this is Nick with the Feed the Fire podcast. Welcome back to another episode. We are 1 week into the Major League Soccer 2025 season. We got the opener out of the way, and we are looking ahead here on this show to the Chicago Fire's now home opener, match day two, at Soldier Field against DC United. Before we get into that preview, we're also going to be discussing a few decisions by the MLS Disciplinary Committee involving Leo Messi, Luis Suarez, and Chicago's own Brian Gutierrez, because I feel like there may be a little discrepancy here. Are we seeing Miami's version of the Jordan rules now with the Messi rules that's been going on? We'll talk about it all here. But if you want to jump in and join the conversation, make sure you follow along on social media at Glasshouse Soccer, or you can email me, glasshousesoccer@gmail.com. Looking forward to continuing the conversation with everyone throughout the social media channels, and hopefully we'll see you at the home opener this Saturday. You may not recognize me because I will be absolutely bundled up as we get ready for a frigid home opening game. I'll be there with my son. Hopefully we can get there by 5:30 when the lots open up, join the tailgate for a little bit, and then get inside for some of the festivities before kickoff. But if you don't see me out in the parking lot, you'll find me nice and cozy up in section 205 for the course of the game. Please feel free to say hi if you're around or if you see me walking about. Always great to talk soccer with any of the listeners here or the viewers over on YouTube. But now let's get into the content for tonight. The Messi rules, as I'm dubbing them. As someone from Chicago, I'm fully aware of the context of the Jordan rules there about how back in the 90s, you couldn't touch Michael without drawing a foul, or he was getting away with different things that other players weren't. And a lot of people saw that, a lot of non-Chicago fans, a lot of non-Jordan fans, saw that as kind of the downfall of the NBA, because now every superstar is getting the superstar treatment, and you're seeing other talented players not get certain calls because they haven't earned it yet, quote unquote. So looking at what happened in this past weekend, we had a couple of different instances that I want to contrast. And as someone who played soccer and as someone who coached youth soccer, and I think as a sports fan, I can speak for everyone here, we just want consistency in our officiating, whether it's on the pitch, before or after the game, and throughout the course of the season. We want consistency. That way we know how to coach, how to play, and what to expect as fans watching the game. This already seems to be inconsistent, and it stinks that week one, we already have to have this conversation. During Miami's game against New York City, Miami was shown an early red card and had to play the vast majority of the match down a player. They ended up coming from behind to tie it in 90 plus 10, stunning fashion, a great goal from Messi on a volley to equalize and take the draw 2-2. But after the game, so again, I'm not going to talk about how whether there shouldn't have been 10 minutes of added extra time there for Miami to come back and equalize that. That's another conversation. I haven't watched enough of the game to know that if the timing was correct or not. But after the game, Messi goes on to accost the referee or confront the referee and get in his face and just scream and yell and all of that sort of thing, right? And we know that leagues around the world and FIFA too have been trying to eliminate players' actions against referees. We've got mass confrontation rules now. There's leagues who are saying only captains can talk to the referees and other officials. We see the fourth official, if he's getting chewed out by a coach or assistant coach, or he sees something on the sideline, he's calling it into the head ref to come over and assess for a potential card or ejection or whatever that else may be, a talking to at the very least. So this is a problem in the game that a lot of leagues and FIFA have recognized. And I think a lot of fans are just kind of sick of seeing it too. Not only is it time wasting, not only is it unprofessional, it takes away from the game. So we want to see a well-called game, a consistently called game, and we don't want to see players spouting off at the referee, especially because it rubs off on the youth levels. Like I even saw it in my son's third grade league last fall. Kids starting to argue with the ref. Now there are a few coaches and parents who probably could also have learned a lesson to not argue with the officials and set a better example, but it does trickle down into the youth ranks. You do see it there. Now, not that that's the main reason we need to get rid of it. It's not helpful to the game, but it is a reason. Now, looking back at this, we saw Messi screaming and yelling at the referee after the game, unhappy with the way things went. And then as he was walking off the field, he exchanged words with a New York City assistant coach and then went over to him and got into his face a little bit, had to be separated by some Inter Miami players. And then he goes back and puts his hands around the neck of the New York City head coach. So here's what the MLS disciplinary committee has said about that interaction, which it's all over social media. You can go find the video of it. The MLS disciplinary committee has fined Inter Miami CF forward Leo Messi an undisclosed amount for violating the hands to the face, head, neck of an opponent policy following the conclusion of Inter Miami's match against New York City on February 22nd. In addition, and that's the quote. Additionally, Luis Suarez was also fined for grabbing the back of the New York City defender Burke Reese's neck at the end of the first half. And yeah, there's a great picture that Fabian Renkel tweeted out of Suarez just with a disgusted look on his face, flipping the bird to somebody. And yeah, that's all you needed to know to see where he's going to get his suspension. But yeah, so the MLS disciplinary committee doesn't address the fact that that Leo Messi seeks out the head official to give him a peace of mind. They don't discuss that at all, at least not in the quote that I've seen or any of the reporting that I've seen. And for putting his hands on the head or neck or face of an opponent, he gets fined. Meanwhile, let's go over to what happened here with Brian Gutierrez in the Columbus game. He goes in for a challenge. And the referee, I forget if he calls a foul or just allows the ball to roll out for a throw-in for Columbus on this one, because the Columbus player was shielding the ball and Gutierrez gets him in the back. So maybe he called a foul, drew a foul for that. But there was a VAR check on this for a dangerous play, for like hitting an opponent in the head, if you will. Not the official term, but that's what they were looking at. And when you do watch the replay, you can kind of see Gutierrez does go through the back a little bit. I don't think he had any intent to hit the opposing player in the head, but this is one of those types of plays where you let the opposing player know you're there and you play a little physical. And then maybe the next time he tries to shield the ball or establish some sort of positioning, he thinks twice about it or moves out of the way or whatever. So it's a very, very hard play from Brian Gutierrez, but was it worthy of a suspension? I personally don't think so. I think it was a really hard one. I think his arm just gets caught up high. It's like one of those when you're running, maybe an elbow comes up or a hand comes up, you catch a guy, you maybe not know he's there or anything like that. Now, Gutierrez, yeah, he was definitely going in hard, definitely going to go knock the opposing player down, but I don't think he had any sort of intent to, you know, hit to the head, malicious ill will, whatever you want to call it like that. But MLS disciplinary committee found that that was enough to not upgrade his yellow card to a red card, because that comes with other sort of technical aspects, that it's a red card against Gutierrez and it's certain disciplinary points against the Chicago Fire. And would they have to appeal it if it's technically a red card, or are they just giving him a suspension? So here's how they broke it down. Here's how they justify the fact that Gutierrez gets a one match suspension. Quote, "The play was reviewed under MLS Disciplinary Committee Parameter 3, where the match officials see an incident and do not issue a red card or act on a case of clear and obvious simulation embellishment that meets the conditions for suspension." So we don't have that here. It's match officials seeing an incident. Okay, so under Parameter 3, the Disciplinary Committee shall issue either a one-match suspension on incidents in which the professional referee organization, PRO, acknowledges an on-field referee, video assistant referee, error, and the committee is unanimous at red card and one match suspension or action taken, or the MLS disciplinary committee shall issue a two or more match suspension on incidents in which discipline warrants at least two match suspension. So in this case, the head referee, Foti Pazakos, recognized went to VAR. So that also is allowing the committee to go back and double check because he did go make a VAR check on this. Now the committee goes on. "The incident in question must be, in the unanimous opinion of the committee, from all available evidence, a clear and unequivocal red card and egregious or repeat behavior in nature, and or such that the MLS disciplinary committee must act to protect player safety or the integrity of the game, and or clear and obvious simulation. Gutierrez will serve his one-match suspension on March 1st during Chicago's match against DC United." So based on that, it does look like that he has been suspended and fined, and the yellow card was upgraded to a red, though I haven't actually seen anything that say that it was technically upgraded to a red. So we'll have to maybe keep our ears out for that. And also thanks to Joe Chats over at OnTap Sportsnet for getting that section of the disciplinary committee rules out there and for letting everyone know that Gutierrez was also fined for that. So comparing the two here, you have Brian Gutierrez, who runs through the back of an opposing player, gets his arm up to the back of the head, not deemed a yellow card initially, given a yellow card upon VAR review, which honestly, I'll have to go back and look at the VAR rules because I don't think that was originally something you could look for. I didn't think you could give a yellow card. You can review for a red that was missed, but then to give a yellow card after not giving a card, I mean, I guess it's a thing because the referee did it, but I didn't think that was kind of the main purpose of VAR, regardless of my understanding of the nuances of VAR and what the textbook law states. In this incident, Gutierrez was not given a card initially. Upon VAR review, was given a yellow card, and then the disciplinary committee upgraded him, fined him, and issued a one-game suspension. Middle of the game, hard challenge, makes contact with the back of the opponent's head, gets an upgraded sentencing from the committee. Now you look back at Suarez and Messi. Suarez grabs the back of the neck of a player, just gets fined. Messi confronts a referee, grabs a coach's neck after the game, after being separated. Now, as I'm putting my lawyer hat on here, when I was back, you know, working for the prosecutor or the public defender, when I had my internships in law school, or when I am, you know, when I'm looking at civil cases that involve some sort of assault or confrontation or battery or something like that, that is one of the factors we're looking at, that the defendant here, or the criminal, whatever you want to call him, walks away, has a chance to cool down, but then goes back. You can throw the phrase premeditated around, that he had thought about doing this, right? That you see it's after the fact and they go back and do it further. And so that is a factor to me that I don't think the disciplinary committee even considered, in the fact that you've got Leo Messi, who after the game is over, and we know the referees, they after the final whistle, they all go back to the center circle and they hang out there and keep an eye on things and wait for the players to leave. Messi goes to him, then gets into it with an opposing coach, is separated and goes back to the opposing coach. So there are plenty of opportunities for him to cool down and walk away. This is outside of any of the parameters of a game. That's always something that I think is considered, maybe not in the textbook definition of these sort of things, but whether or not a play occurred within the rules of the game, right? Like if you walked up to someone and punched them in the face while you were playing a soccer game, that is clearly outside of any of the rules of the game. But if you come in with the hard tackle and take a guy's ankles out, you can argue that that is within the context of the game and not an assault and battery, okay? So I think that the MLS disciplinary committee in week one, at the very least, has proven to be inconsistent. And is that because they don't want Messi and Suarez to miss a game, or at least even miss the same game, and just see ticket sales drop and attendance drop for that one match? Let me actually look and see what is their next match. I should have thought of that before to see how they want to, who are they allowing to see Messi, if I can be sarcastic and say it that way. Okay, Miami is traveling to Houston on Sunday, March 2nd. So do they want to deprive the Houston fans of their cross-conference matchup with the greatest of all time here and his friends from Barcelona? Maybe. But, you know, it's you look at that. You look at them changing the CONCACAF game to schedule it on a night where it's not supposed to not be as cold, but or not as snowy, but still as cold, things of that nature. You look at all the other little decisions around the league, and yeah, it's hard to argue against the fact that there may be the Messi rules in effect. And we'll see if that continues throughout this weekend. We'll see if that continues throughout the season. We will see if that continues and Messi stays longer than his contract or does more than his base duties with Inter Miami. But that's just something where I am. And it's not like Gutierrez has a bad reputation either. I don't think he's had any such disciplinary issue either. And I don't understand how that's not taken into the equation either, or that the referee, initially doesn't give a card and then only gives a yellow. If he had given a yellow initially, reviewed it and kept the yellow or upgraded to a red, maybe I'd feel a little bit better about it. But the fact that there was no card initially, he had to see it on VAR to give a yellow, and he's the ref that's managing the game. He's the one that has all the other input going on from the time leading up to that. And the disciplinary committee comes in and then upgrades it to a red, you know, or gives the suspension out anyway. I think also that kind of undermines the confidence of the referees. The referees now are going to look at this and say too, well, hey, it doesn't matter what I do. They're going to review these plays anyway. So I might as well just give yellow cards out and let them play 11 on 11. And then the league can come back later and suspend a player if they deem it worthy. Like, I think you're also going to see that. And if that starts to become noticeable, then you're going to see players start coming in with a lot harder challenges. So there's a lot of different ways that this is affecting the league, from a Messi stardom level, from a Chicago Fire level, now home opener without their starting central attacking midfielder and homegrown and kind of face of the franchise, and a guy who is starting to become a face in MLS. Like, he's been a young player of the year preseason nominee for some people. He's on the Celsius commercials for MLS. Like, Gutierrez is starting to emerge as a face in MLS now. And then this happened. So there's a lot of effect that this one decision, or I should say these two decisions, the Miami decisions and the Gutierrez decisions, from the disciplinary committee are coming out. And I think you're already starting to lose a little trust and confidence and reliability in them. So that is my take on all of those issues that occurred off the field after the matches on this past Saturday. And now let's take a look going forward about some of what's going to happen on the field. But at this time, I am going to remind everyone for our little water break here, please make sure you go out to your local 7-Eleven, and they're starting to stock the shelves at Costco. Get out and buy yourself a bottle of Skira Icelandic Spring Water. We have been promoting them since the beginning of this show. Big thank you to Skira for continuing to support us now that the season has kicked back off again. Really appreciate it. Really appreciate everything that John Donovan has done to help foster this relationship. And we're looking forward to John providing some additional insight and clips and recaps and previews and things as the show continues. So John, if you're listening, make sure you're sending me the clip after the match. We're looking forward to it. Speaking of that match, the Chicago Fire will be hosting DC United this Saturday evening at Soldier Field. Let's get to know DC United a little bit. There has been a lot of move from this team, similar to the Chicago Fire. So let's take a look at some of the players from last season who are on the outs of DC, who are no longer with the team. Keeper Alex Bono had his option declined. Midfielder Russell Knus out of contract. Nathan Crockford, keeper, option declined. Most of these guys, they declined the options on. Christian Dahomey, Jeremy Gray, Tyler Miller, keeper, Martin Rodriguez, Pedro Santos, Hayden Sargis, and keeper Luis Zamudio. A lot of options declined. You saw defender Christopher McVeigh traded to San Diego. Mateusz Klich traded to Atlanta. Matai Akinboni transferred to AFC Bournemouth. And midfielder TKD, or are they calling him TDP? Ted Cudipietro was traded to Colorado on February 10th. So there's a lot of guys who had a lot of minutes for this team who are now out of the roster, but they did bring a lot of new players in as well. Along the back, you saw goalkeeper Jordan Farr get signed. You saw goalkeeper Luis Barraza come in on a trade from NYC, and goalkeeper Kim Jun Hung come in on a transfer from Jeonbuk Hyundai Motors FC. I think that's a Japanese club. Let me look that up real quick. So I am giving you all the correct information here. It's in the K League, so it is in the South Korean League. Pardon me for getting those leagues mixed up. Also, they have added a few defenders, Lucas McNaughton from Nashville, Derek Dodson in the reentry draft, and Kai Rowles coming in from Heart of Midlothian overseas. They've bolstered their midfield as well, getting Jose Kojima in a trade from San Diego, Randall Leal picking him up off of waivers. You all remember him from Nashville. Brandon Cervania they got as a free agent. Gavin Turner, a homegrown. Rita Zuhir, also on a free transfer. They picked up some attacking talent as well. Joao Peglo from Radomiak Radom. And where is that? If any of you guys know the club Radomiak Radom, I would be absolutely impressed. They are 13th in the Ekstraklasa, which is a Polish football club. And that club is based in the town of Radom. There you go. They picked up Hakim Karamoko from the Super Draft and Fidel Barajas, a recent signing just on the 26th of February. They got him on loan from Chivas Guadalajara. So he is expected to have an immediate impact and will probably be playing, I assume, kind of a dual striker role up top with Christian Benteke. So that is who DC has brought in and brought out in their opening match, a 2-2 draw at home against Toronto. They lined up in a 4-2-3-1 with Kim Jun-Hong in goal, David Schnegg, Lucas Bartlett, Kai Rowles, Aaron Herrera along the back line, Boris Enau and Brandon Cervania as their D-mids, Jacob Morel, Gabriel Pirani, and Jose Kojima as their attacking mids, and Benteke as the solo striker up front. But we'll see again how that changes with some of the new signings that they have brought into the fold here. DC had meh game against Toronto. Enau put him up in the 8th minute. Osorio tied it in the 28th. Benteke scores in the 35th to give them the lead, and then Bernadeschi converts a second-half penalty for the draw. So a little bit of a back-and-forth affair there. Only 8 shots, 56% possession, not the best passing numbers. Their expected goals on the night, though, that ended up being a 0.8. Team expected goals, 0.8. So this could be a very good opportunity. This is a very good opportunity for the Chicago Fire to take advantage of a struggling DC United team, a team also in flux, a team coming off of a bad season, not really making huge moves to improve their roster like we've seen the Chicago Fire doing and trying to do. And being the home opener, even without Brian Gutierrez, the Fire should be able to win this one. I would love to see like a 3-1 win. I'll predict a 3-1 win. Let's keep the vibes good here for the home opener. With all the defensive mistakes we saw last week, I'm not going to say they keep a clean sheet, especially with Christian Benteke. We saw him still find a way to score against the Chicago Fire last season, despite Carlos Duran playing him pretty well defensively when they were playing their match at Bridgeview here. But the thing that concerns me, I'm going to pick 3-1, but there are concerns. There are concerns because there's still a lot of injuries for the Chicago Fire, a lot of players that are out. It's been reported that anyone who was out last match is still going to be out and unavailable for this one, though hopefully Hugo Kuipers can go more than 45 minutes as he continues to build towards 100% match fitness. So who's out for the Fire? Defender Leo Barroso, though he's back in training. Dylan Borso, Chase Gasper. I think he is on season-ending injury already. I know he's on the injury report. He's going to miss some time. Marin Haile Selassie is out. Romanique Kwame, their loanee from Cadiz, out. Chris Mueller was out last match, not due to injury. So his status is up in the air. Are they shopping him around? Is he going to be back in action? Actually, I think... we assumed they were shopping him around just because of how they're constructing the roster and the amount of wingers and midfielders they're bringing in. But also, I recall seeing that Chris Mueller had a new little baby, and that is part of the reason why he was out for the last match. So, that's exactly it. I was just pulling up some of the social media stuff here. So, yeah, I think Chris Mueller was out having number two with his family, and so that hopefully he can be back, and maybe we'll see him as a sub in this match as well. David Pareba, we know, is out. Mauricio Pineda was out as well. He's back in training, though, but I, again, from what I had seen reported from the press conference on Berhalter yesterday, that any player who was out the first game is not going to be playing in the second game. So the Fire are still a little thin on their depth, but I do expect them to roll out a very, very similar starting lineup as they did last week. Obviously, with Gutierrez out, we're going to see who steps into that midfield role, but I do expect the back line to be the same. I do expect Kuiper, Zinkernagel, and Bamba to be in the attack, and we'll see. Maybe Mueller does slot in somewhere and be a bit more of an attacking midfielder option for the Chicago Fire. That being said, I expect the Fire to play like they did that last week. High press, high energy, bolstered on by the crowd. Hope to see everyone at the match and get the first 3 points of the season. So with that, let's do a couple kind of fluff headlines that we have seen pop up so you can stay in the know of all the Chicago Fire news. The Chicago Fire actually have announced a couple new partnerships. Well, one, they've extended a partnership with Revolution Brewing, the company behind Anti-Hero IPA. That's their most popular, most well-known brand. They did the Hazy Pitch beer last season. They have a new one, Cold Time, that is going to be available at the Fire matches. So they continue that partnership. And also, Hyatt, the hotel chain, the World of Hyatt, is and as the official sponsor of Chicago Fire FC, or has become an official sponsor of Chicago Fire FC after a multi-year agreement. This is cool. And one of my friends works for Hyatt, and I got to call him to see if we can take advantage of this and how this is going to work out. But here's what you can get when you stay. There's a new Chicago Fire. It's called the Chicago Fire FC Stay Package. And you get perks if you stay at the Hyatt Regency McCormick Place close to Soldier Field. You get discounted room rate during Fire home games. You get overnight parking at the hotel, $20 credit to their market in the hotel, discounted drinks at the hotel's Arc Bar on game day. You get Hyatt by Chicago Fire branded memorabilia and a photo booth in the Hyatt Regency McCormick Place Chicago lobby. So there's some cool stuff that Hyatt is doing with the Fire, and you can stay at the one near Soldier Field and get a few of these perks. What else does it say here? To find experiences around this collaboration in the near future? Like, ooh, I'm not sure what that is, but that sounds like a cool, like, Hyatt promotional type of a thing. So, yeah, if you're coming in from out of town, if you're coming in from the suburbs, you want to make a weekend of a Chicago Fire game and a stay in the city, you check out the Hyatt Regency and check out the new Chicago Fire Stay Package. By the way, I'm not getting any sort of promo or kickback or anything like that for that, but it's just some cool news, and it really does show you how much the Chicago Fire, not only are they trying to reinvest in the town and build up local partnerships and give more perks to their fans, but it also shows the business ambition that the club has, which I think is pretty amazing, especially with all the money that you've got to spend on players nowadays and upgraded training facilities and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We know the Fire are crushing it on the business side. Now let's get the results on the pitch. And with that, I will let you all get back to your regularly scheduled goings-on during the day. I hope to see you all out at the home opener. I hope to see 3 points come the end of Saturday night. I'm not going to freeze my butt off and be out on the lakefront late just to see another loss. Don't want to do that. We're keeping good vibes here. And with that, let's go Fire.